to the Tennessee walls when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved one, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale. If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,
you're sure
to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
Yes.
Hi, it's Mark Snyder at PNP Network. How are you?
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good.
So are you.
Yes, I am. Thank
you. Yes. You just keep rolling along, don't you?
Just keep rolling along. My gosh.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me.
I feel like a case on sometime, too.
Yeah. I mean, my mom was a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan.
Right.
And
nice.
As a matter of fact, I got a copy of the Best of Patti Page, the Millennium Collection. Excellent
CD.
From Universal.
The last one, yeah.
Yeah, that's available all over the place.
Is it?
Yeah, it's available all over the internet and stores everywhere.
Oh.
So folks can pick that up. It's got all of your greatest hits on it, 12 songs.
And
of course, that's not anywhere near all of your songs. You had over 50 charted hits. So for folks out there who are listening, we're talking with Patti Page. Patti has sold over about 100 million records in her career. 100 million, folks. Her song,
a long career, though, Mark.
Her song called Tennessee Waltz is the third largest single ever behind White Christmas and Candles in the Wind, and is the biggest selling single ever recorded by a female artist. So she has chops in the biz, and she's been around for a while, and she's being inducted into the Casino Legends Hall of Fame. How'd you get that one?
Well, I guess it was from starting back in 1948 for the first time at the Thunderbird in Las Vegas, when there were only 3 hotels there. And now you know, or should know, how many there are now.
There's tons now, but too many to name.
Mm-hmm.
But in the early, in the 50s and also in the early 60s, you performed at the Desert Inn.
Right, uh-huh.
And then you went over to
I
the Sands.
I was there when it opened.
Yeah, you went to the Sands.
Uh-huh.
So you've been all over the place.
I certainly have through all these years. I haven't played Vegas in a long time except for private functions with, you know, different companies.
Yeah.
But I play mostly Reno and in the Laughlin area. The superstars play Vegas now, you know.
Of course. But you're a superstar as well, though.
You're
a superstar.
I was never classified as one.
Well, listen, if you sell 100 million records and you have one of the largest songs ever recorded, you're a superstar.
Well, well, thank you.
It's true. You know, listen, it's kind of funny, though. You're a legendary name, but when I looked up PattiPage.com, that's a real estate agent. You're
right.
MissPattiPage.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
We tried to get the just Patti Page, but it didn't work.
Yeah, the real estate agent took it instead, huh?
Yes, some lady, that's her real name. She
yeah, it is.
Las
yeah.
Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's better to have that than someone who just takes your name and tries to extort money out of you, you know?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that do that.
And that has happened, yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that has happened, yeah.
Now, you got 15 gold records.
Uh-huh.
And just a ton of hits. And you're still recording. I understand that you've had a couple releases last year. Unfortunately, I never got them, but I'd love to hear them.
Make sure that Shanti gets them to you.
What did you release last year? Tell me about that.
Well, we had a children's album called Child of Mine and a Christmas album called Sweet Sounds of Christmas.
Now, the children's album, I assume, had How Much Is That Doggy in the Window on it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
In fact, we did. That was the 50th anniversary of it. And we did it in reggae style.
You're kidding?
No, it turned out pretty cute. Yeah.
That's funny.
And
now, whose idea was that, Patti?
Well, that was my producer's, John Besner.
Oh.
Yeah.
So he's a Grammy Award-winning songwriter and producer himself.
He sure is. Yeah. He and his wife both.
Yeah, so that's a good thing. And then you did The Sweet Sounds of Christmas. Mm-hmm. What kind of songs did you record? Obviously, the Christmas songs. Which ones did you choose?
Right, well, it was like Silent Night. We did Christmas Bells, Cave Upon a Midnight Clear. We interspersed it with the old standards, you know, like the hymns, and then with things like White Christmas and Mel Torme's The Christmas Song.
Mm-hmm.
And I even think we might have put Jingle Bells in there. I'm not sure.
So how long, why did it take you 50 years to do a Christmas album?
Well, nobody was asking for my services as far as a record company was concerned. And so we just took it upon ourselves to record it ourselves and produce it and distribute it.
I mean, in the 50s, yeah, but in the 50s, you were one of the biggest names singing out there. Why didn't someone say, hey, Patty, do a Christmas album for us?
Well, I did a Christmas album. I did two.
Ah, there you go.
One for Mercury, one for Columbia when I went with them.
Uh-huh.
But that's ages ago, 40-some
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah, but they're re-releasing all those things now on CDs.
Yes, they are.
So, now, one of the things, of course, that you didn't write any of the songs you did, right?
No.
Yeah. I talk to singers all the time, and of course, if you didn't write it, the residual is not the same as the people who wrote it. So it's,
oh, no.
Yeah, so I assume that even, for instance, the CD I'm holding, The Best of Patty Page, do you actually get anything for that?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. So you're still
on their books. I get two checks a year from Universal and one and two the same from Columbia.
Are they substantial amounts or okay?
Yes, they are, and I wish that every recording artist could say that after 50 years in the recording business.
Exactly. I agree with you. I've talked to a lot of rock people.
More than that.
Yeah, I've talked to rock people who recorded in the 60s some huge hits, and they get pretty much nothing now.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'm very lucky, I think, because I just think the companies that I've been with have been pretty substantial ones, Mercury and Columbia, even though they've sold it a few thousand times since then. But I've had some nice people that work with me, and they're pretty honorable.
Tell me a little bit about the Patty Page story. You were born Clara Ann Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact,
Oklahoma.
Your birthday is coming up soon, so happy birthday in advance.
Thank you.
And I guess that, you know, you sang in church with your sisters and stuff and did all kinds of things like that. And what was it that got you, you know, heard? I know you got into radio. Tell us a little bit about the story about how you became Patty Page.
Well, I went to a radio station in the summer of, I think it was my ninth year of school. I was a sophomore, just got out of ninth grade, and the dean of girls gave all of us different recommendations, you know, to go get a summer job somewhere. And I was studying art, and very diligently, I wanted to be a commercial artist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to this day, I don't know what that meant, but I just thought it meant painting. But I went up to the radio station and applied for a job in their art department. And I had a lot of nerve because I didn't know what the art department was in a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
I found out later, but while I was there on the in the sales floor, there were two floors to the radio station. The program director came in as I was filling out my application and recognized me from having heard me in an assembly at our school and said, are you here to audition for a job for singing? And I said, oh, no, I'm here to apply for a job in your art department.
Hmm.
And so he kind of looked at me kind of funny, and he said, well, if you're interested, I'll set it up that you can go down to our studio floor and put something on an acetate, or I don't know what they had in those days because it was before even wire.
Right.
But we have a studio musician that's here full-time, and he'll play anything you want, and I'll set it up with the engineer. Would you be interested? And I said, sure. And so that's what I did. And about a month later, they called me to come in to audition for a weekly show they were starting. And they just took off the Clara part of my name and called me Ann Fowler. And then probably a month after that, their girl that was a regular on the station, called Patty Page, was leaving. and she was sponsored by the Page Mill Company. And they asked me if I would audition for that. And I said, sure. You know, when you're 13 years old, you'll do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Say, not anything, I don't mean that, but
it
seems a big deal.
Sure.
And so I did, and they called me and asked me if I would take over that show, which I did the following year, the school year. And that's how I got the name of Patty Page. So when I left the year after I graduated from high school, I asked them if I could take the name with me, and they said, yes, we won't have another one. And I said, okay.
So you legally changed your name at that point, or?
Uh-huh. Well, not that point. When I got to New York after that, I did.
Now, the person...
But they promised me they wouldn't have anyone after that, which they didn't.
Yeah. The person that was like a touring band manager at the time heard your voice, and his name was Jack. He became your manager for forever.
A long time.
Yeah.
Yes, we were together 50 years.
Wow. Did he pass away, or?
No.
No, he's still around?
We had differences of opinion, and it was a mutual thing, and we just dissolved our relationship.
That's a long time, though. Wow.
Yes, it is.
Almost 50 years.
It was 50 years, huh?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, it must have been tough. It's like a breakup, you know?
It was very tough. It was in ways worse than a marriage when you have to call it quits.
Hmm. So what was the first song then? I know what it was. I think it was called Confess. Was that your first single that you ever put out?
No.
No?
Oh, no. It was probably the fourth single.
But that was the first big one.
It was the first one that caused any kind of noise because it was the first time anyone had recorded with themselves. And even though Les Paul takes the credit and is given the credit for being the first overdub artist, that is not true, but...
So you actually... Yeah, we should explain to people what that means, because at the time, you couldn't hire backup singers because Jack couldn't afford it, so they actually just dubbed your voice as background, too, and that was the first time that was done.
Uh-huh, and it worked out fine, because in those days, we didn't have different channels for recording. We did it on one channel, and it was an echo effect. And that was exactly what the song called for. And so it worked out great.
And Confess hit the top 12 of the charts, and it was recorded, I guess, on a New Year's Eve, right?
It sure was, because it was the year that just before that the record companies were going on strike, the musicians were going on strike, and there would be no records made in the United States in 1948. And so everybody was recording as much as they could, and as far as their record company would let them, according to their stature. And I was fortunate. I recorded quite a few songs before the deadline, and Confess was one of them.
And it's interesting to note also that shortly thereafter, your first million seller was called With My Eyes Wide Open, I'm Dreaming. And if you look at the label, it said Patty Page Quartet.
Yes.
Which was you.
Which was me. On most of the labels, it had my name printed four times, the original one.
Isn't that funny, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that was all new. What do you think when you look at all the stuff that's going on now with the Internet and all this broadcasting stuff that you can do in a computer, it must be just astounding to you.
It is, very much so. To know that, you know, you're there in the beginning of something and to see all the different changes that have been made electronically, sophisticatedly, you know, everything. It's just amazing what you can do with a computer now. Mine boggles my mind, and I love working on it, but I don't do that well. But I'm proud of what I can do on it.
You know, Patty, I always loved the record companies and the kind of things that they did. And one of the things I thought was really, really funny, we talk about Christmas. In the early 50s, one of your record companies insisted that you do a song called Boogie Woogie Santa Claus. And on the back, they stuck this song called Tennessee Waltz.
Right.
And history was made.
An obscure song they wanted for the backside.
Yeah.
Because nothing sold at that time other than a Christmas song.
So the DJs were saying, well, this is Boogie Woogie thing, it's all right, but let's turn this over. Wow, this Tennessee Waltz is great.
Yeah. I don't think anybody really ever did play Boogie Woogie Santa Claus. You know, and if they did, they just turned it over immediately, and that's why they did, because they didn't really like the other side.
So this B-side goes on and remains in the top 10 for 26 weeks. And listen to this, folks. It was number one in the country for 13 weeks. That's 4 months. Three months is number one, which is unbelievable. It sold 10 million copies and became the best-selling record by a female artist. What was your reaction to all this incredible success at that time?
Well, actually, it was at a time when the media was not as big as it is now. So I wasn't harassed by people wanting stories all the time, you know, or interviews other than what we did with disc jockeys. And I was working all that time, so it was kind of hard to sit back and really capture all the things that were happening. I know that as far as the audiences were concerned, we had more and more. But, you know, it wasn't a time where you played big sports arenas or big stadiums. In fact, the first stadium thing that was ever done was in, like, the mid-50s, I think, where we played Soldiers Field and the football field in Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and, I think, like, Detroit. Five different cities. And it took Perry Como, Nat Cole, Patti Page, Eddie Fisher, the Billy May Band. It was the first big show to be put on like that.
Really?
Because it was just, you know, one person couldn't fill an arena. It had never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured they'd put more than one person, one star on the bill, which they did.
Well, you mentioned that there weren't stadiums and there wasn't all this thing, but I mean, there was stardom there. Not only did you hit, you know, with that, then you got two more number ones in a row, Mockingbird Hill and Would I Love You, Love You, Love You. By 1952, you were the best seller around, and actually the best selling singer of the decade by females. Got Cashbox Awards and billboards and things were taking off, and you were on every single TV show. You know, TV might not have been integral at that point, but you were on Milton Berle and Como and Dinah Shore and all these other shows, so
right.
You were a quite visible person.
Yes, I was.
You were a big star. I mean, how did a girl from a small town handle that?
Well, I guess I handled it pretty well because it didn't get to my head, and I'm kind of glad about that. And it wasn't a case of what happens today. A star becomes a star overnight and becomes a millionaire overnight.
Mm-hmm.
That just wasn't the way it was done in the 50s.
Right.
You know, there wasn't that kind of money. I remember being there and when Marlena Dietrich played Las Vegas, and she was the first artist that ever got $50,000
right.
for a week. You know, and that was unheard of.
Mm.
And you know, stars like Nat Cole, myself, we'd all work there. We never got that kind of money.
Yeah.
But then, you know, now they do.
Yeah, well, now they get megabucks. But back then, though, of course, you know, $10,000 or something was like, you know, $100,000 is now.
Well, yes, as far as being able to spend it.
Right.
But the media was different, too. It just was different.
Mm.
Completely different.
How much is that Doggy in the Window? I love that song. It's such a catchy tune. When you first heard it, did you say to yourself, "Well, this is going to be a big hit"?
No.
No?
No, I didn't. I was doing it for a children's album, and I thought it was adorable. But as we were recording it, that's when Joe Carlton, who was the A&R man at Mercury, thought, well, this would be a great single.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to put it in the album. We're going to do a single with it. And it was at the time when there were a few, you know, little ditties that were out, as they call them.
Right.
And it was when people were really looking for cute little things, and it was just the right timing for it. I believe in that.
Yeah.
Very definitely.
Now, you also did a TV show, too. You did, in fact, you did a number of different TV shows, but I know on ABC you did one called The Patti Page Show, right?
Right. And the first one was on CBS, which was alternating with Perry Como.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we filmed a 15-minute show. And I did Tuesdays and Thursdays, and his show was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Hmm.
And then I did the Scott Music Hall, an hour, I think, no, a half-hour show on NBC. And then in 1957, I did the first color show that CBS had.
Really?
A variety show.
Wow.
Called The Big Record.
The Big Record, yeah. The Big Weekly Extravaganza, yeah.
And I was the hostess on that show.
Huh. So now, I know nowadays, if you're on TV, you're huge. I do a TV show here, and everywhere I go, people know who I am. Mm-hmm. Was it like that back then, or was there not many people that were watching?
Well, like I said, the media was not that prominent. There were people that recognized me, but I could always go to dinner. You can't do that now. A female star can't go out and have dinner without being bothered. But in the 50s, you could. It was just the beginning of TV, and people were getting used to it. Everybody didn't have it in their homes like they have now. I mean, it's like your other self.
Right. When you were on What's My Line, did they guess who you were?
Finally, I think they did.
That
there were some
fun.
Good questions that were asked, and I don't know. I don't have a copy of that show, and it's a long time ago, but I remember doing it.
And you also did Person to Person. Hey, you did Person to Person with Edward Morrow, too.
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that very much.
Yeah. You know, around here in Massachusetts, we hear your song all the time, Old Cape Cod. They're always playing that
right.
song, of course. You know? Do you ever get to Cape Cod at all?
Yes, I do. My husband's mother lived there for a few years before she died and before she came to live with us. And it was always a favorite place of theirs, but mine, it became a favorite place of mine, first because of the record, and I had never seen Cape Cod when I recorded it, but then after that I've spent a lot of time in that area, and Boston was always one of my favorite places to play.
Hmm.
I opened Blindstrips there on the south side of Boston.
Yeah. Now, I was just reading all these things about your life here, you know, when you moved to Hollywood and got married. Kathleen and Danny, your children, I was reading this thing here. It's very interesting stuff. But what I was really interested in was your first time going to the Academy Awards. I guess you sang Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
That must have been, and you also acted as well, from what I understand. But tell me about that, the excitement of being at the Academy Awards, singing one of the nominated songs.
Well, that was exciting, and it was the reason I was there was because of the ingenuity of an A&R man at Columbia who told the producers of the show that I would record Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte if I could sing it on the Academy Awards, and they agreed to that, and I recorded it. So I recorded it after the picture came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly helped the picture after that, but my song had nothing to do with the picture. I mean, it wasn't in the picture. I wish it had been, but everyone associates it with the picture.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting. I was there with trying to think of the five of us who sang, because those are the people that I was involved with. You kind of stay in that vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy Wilson was one of the entertainers, and I think, well, Julie Andrews' song won from Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah.
That
was
what it was up against.
That was a tough competition.
Yes, it was. But the idea that it was nominated, it was really great.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah.
And it was exciting. I was very nervous. But I would be more nervous today if I were to sing on the Academy Award.
Mm-hmm. I guess that, now, talking about singing and, I guess PBS did a big special with you for your 50th anniversary a few years ago, and that must have been incredible, too, in Carnegie Hall?
Well, that was, PBS didn't do that one. We recorded it here in El Cajon at their Performing Arts Center. But it was that show.
Yeah, and it actually was on a CD as well. and got your Grammy. It got a Grammy Award. It was your first one.
Right.
Yeah.
That was my first Grammy.
It took you 50 years to get a Grammy, Patty.
Yes, it did.
Wow.
They weren't introduced until 1957, I don't think.
Now, any of your children or grandchildren have showbiz in their blood?
Oh, they all want to be rock stars.
Of course.
But I don't think that takes any talent in their blood.
Yeah, I figured that your grandchildren probably want to be like Britney Spears.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, which is...
But she can sing a little.
A little. Yeah. So you were the first female to be inducted into the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame with Merle Haggard and Woody Guthrie.
Right.
And got into the Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame. You've been all over the place. And I think the coolest thing is, you know, you're in your 70s. You're still out there running around singing and doing all the things you were doing before. How does it feel to just be out there still, you know, going out there and recording and having your records go out? And, you know, it must be nice.
Well, it makes me feel nice. I think I said earlier in our interview that I don't think I've ever had an ego problem, so I don't think it's because of that. I think the reason I would hate to give up the business is to know that I'm gotten too old for it.
Mm.
But as long as I can still sing, I would like to. But if I can't do it physically, I won't.
Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Patty.
Thank you so much for calling.
And thanks so much for coming on.
Give my friends there in the Boston area my love.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.